Nice to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In.
You have always been a voice of reason through all of this.
Appreciate your time, what you're doing for America.
I give you advice, and it doesn't work at all.
You are definitely not inept by any means.
I like to hear women say that about me.
Whatever advice you're going to send my way, I am 100% taking it.
I can't tell you what to do. I will not tell you what to do.
Okay. Well, thanks.
That wasn't the answer I wanted.
Are you kidding me?
Great stuff, Dr. Ray. I'm glad I called.
I've scheduled my day around listening to your radio show.
You don't have to laugh so hard.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
We are not comfortable with psychobabble. I can't go with that on this program. So I'm not sure I can hear where you're coming from. Dr. Zinn, lowest rated program, not only on Catholic media, but all media anywhere. Percentage psychobabble, 2.62%. Someone might say, what about 0%? You can't go zero. Remember the old ways that they did these meteorological radar reports on TV? And it looked like it was rain, and they said, well, that's ground clutter, you know, all the big buildings. Well, it's kind of the same thing here. It's kind of babble clutter, which is if I say something like, well, I was listening to this record by Sonny and Cher. See, Cher comes across as psychobabble, like as in, I'd like to share that with you. So those kinds of words that can have a couple of meanings sometimes get tagged as psychobabble, but in fact, 0%. This program is Look Back Friday. Most Fridays, this is the way we do it. Take previous phone calls, and my justification for selecting those phone calls is that I would like to comment a little bit more about the dynamic of a call or a word that the caller used that I didn't get a chance to define, or a direction that I would have wanted to go with the call, but the caller was determining the direction because this was something of immediate concern to them. Now, that all sounds very altruistic, but in the words of St. Thomas Aquinas, when you're looking for motives, follow the self. In fact, I just want to talk more. That's all. I didn't hear myself talk enough. And sometimes Andrew Krucek says, you talk through the whole call, and I'm going to put you up there to say more? And I say, well, I have more to say. So we will get to those calls. There's certain things that, as a parent, you don't want to hear. Things that your kids say to you. I remember one that kind of shook me up. My son, he said, Dad, here's my report card. Along with a long list I've compiled of entrepreneurs who flunked out of high school. Just things that just kind of shake you. St. Peter asked our Lord, how many times should I forgive my brother? Now, St. Peter was not aware of the linguistic police. He should have said, how many times should I forgive my sibling? Or not even sibling, because that's narrow. How many times should I forgive a person? But apparently, St. Peter was not up on our cutting-edge linguistic sensitivity. So he said, how many times should I forgive my brother? Seven? Now, the rabbis at that time, as a group, said three. Three strikes and you're out. It's enough. I'm going to forgive you three times. Clearly, if you can't correct it in three times, you don't mean to correct it, you don't want to correct it, and that's it. Your forgiveness is over. But Peter had been hanging with Jesus, and I would imagine, although I can't know his motive, imagine he wanted to show him, I'm learning, Jesus, because you're teaching us about mercy, and I want you to know that I've absorbed that teaching about mercy, and in fact, seven times. Now, Jesus said something, of course, that we, most people who are familiar with New Testament Scripture, not seven, 70 times seven. Now, literally, that's 490. But what he was saying was completely. Seven is the number of completion. 70 adds a little impetus to it. 70 times 7. 7 times 70. Now, that's a lot. I would be content to just go with the literal number, 490. Because once I got the 490 and I'd keep track, then I'd say, good, I don't have to forgive anymore. I need a loophole. Now, obviously, I can't take the literal number because that's not what Jesus intended me to learn from that. Completely. And I got to thinking, is there any way that I can reduce the amount of times I have to forgive? And I came up with one. And I think it's phenomenal. Matter of fact, it could cut in half at least the amount of times I have to forgive someone. The way to do it is to ask myself a simple question. Is there really anything for me to forgive? I'll give you an illustration. Sometime back when the kids were still at home, my wife was going out for the night, and she told me that her mother was coming over to watch the kids. Now, I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. I'm home. I can watch the kids. I can do this. I'm not that inept as a dad. What's she really saying here? All right, wait a minute. Before I get upset, before I confront her, I will be magnanimous, and I shall forgive her for her faux-pas. So I went up to the bedroom, and I said, honey, why you got your mother coming over here? I'm here. And she said, yeah, I know. I was going to put Hannah in charge of you. Hannah at that time was our 10-year-old girl, which Hannah would have reveled in having that kind of authority over her dad. She said, no, I had my mom come over because I knew you were wanting to work on your parenting book, and I wanted to give you some uninterrupted time to do that. Now, here I was, all primed to be kind and forgiving, when in fact there was nothing to forgive. My wife didn't do anything forgiveworthy. Matter of fact, she was being charitable. However, I misinterpreted it. And I got to thinking, how many times do I think there's something for me to forgive? Maybe something somebody said, which I interpreted as a put-down, or I interpreted as insensitive or hurtful, or anything that I might take personally. When in fact, the possibility exists that that's not at all the way they meant it. Not at all. Much of the time, I think, that we think we have to forgive someone is because we are reading their motive. Their motive was ill intent. Their motive was hurtful. Their motive was insensitive. Their motive was something that I took as an offense. When in fact, in reality, it wasn't that at all. It's not there. Zero. And I got to thinking, I wonder how many times I do that. I wonder how many times I think that I'm such a magnanimous individual that I will forgive them for what they did or said, when there's nothing to forgive. It's in my head. The offense hung in my head solidly in psychological mid-air. No offense was intended at all. It was my misinterpretation that turned it into an offense. That's a scary thing to realize how wrong you could be, how often, in interpreting somebody's motive. You can see behavior. You can hear words. But it's hard to get inside somebody's head and fathom their motives. Because, in part, motives are not simple. very often they're not straightforward. They're usually a complex blend of all kinds of motives. But knowing that we have a propensity, call it our fallen human nature, we have a propensity to take offense. And that propensity inclines us to find offense when there's no offense. And then, if you want to be a good Christian, you say, well, okay, I'll forgive. I'll forgive. I'll forgive. You know, my mother-in-law says these things all the time, and I have to forgive her all the time. Are you sure that every time she says those things, she means offense? She is not, in fact, making a comment on your motherhood. She's trying to be helpful. Or she's not, in fact, being insensitive to something. Or when she, quote-unquote, says something about your religion, she's not trying to put it down. She's trying to say, I don't understand it. And you say to yourself, I've been forgiving my mother-in-law for the last 7 years. Well, how many times would you say you've had to do that? Oh, I can't count them, but I'll bet it's a couple hundred. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's 52. The point is this. Keep in mind that you could be wrong when you think you need to forgive somebody because they didn't do anything wrong. You interpreted it as them doing something wrong. You interpreted it as they had bad intent or personal intent, when in fact, that wasn't there. Maybe they did it out of thoughtlessness. Maybe they did it out of insecurity. Maybe they did it out of obliviousness to how it would sound. But they meant no offense. And I always have to ask myself that a lot. When I'm ready to forgive, you know. Yeah, well, maybe there's nothing to forgive. So that's the way I found getting around that always forgiving completely. Because sometimes there ain't nothing to forgive. Dr. Ray.
My dad, sharp as a tack, but getting him out for a dentist trip got harder every year. When he moved to the senior residence where he lives now, Dr. Mansour's portable dental service was a godsend. Dr. Mansour comes to wherever the homebound patient may be, whether in a nursing facility or the comfort of home. All the services you'd expect in a dentist office brought straight to the patient's door. Call 586-873-5567. That's 586-873-5567 or portabledentalservices.com.
The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jingle.
St. Ignatius of Loyola wrote in the first rule of his teaching on the discernment of spirits, in persons going from mortal sin to mortal sin, the enemy is ordinarily accustomed to propose apparent pleasures to them, leading them to imagine sensual delights and pleasures in order to hold them more and more and make them grow in their vices and sins. Father Timothy Gallagher writes, if this working in the imagination is the ordinary tactic of the enemy in all ages, it would seem true to say the stakes are higher in a culture of the image, as is ours today. How does the enemy of human nature act when we are moving away from God? For persons moving away from God, the enemy works in the imagination to keep a person engaged with sin, moving from mortal sin to mortal sin. The enemy's empty promises are always a lie. When believed and acted upon, they always leave the soul weakened and farther from God.
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
Sure, there are a million reasons keeping you from going back to school, but here's one solid reason to let go of them all. Michigan Reconnect can help you earn a community college degree tuition-free. So go ahead, explore your calling, uncover more opportunities, and find where you're meant to be. Get started on your tuition-free journey today at michigan.gov/reconnect. Sponsored by the Michigan Association of Broadcasters and the Michigan Department of Labor and Economic Opportunity.
Although I am trained to read minds, able to read them in a single bound across vast distances, over mountain range, across plains. Nice to have you with me. This is The Doctor Is In, and this is Look Back Friday. Jenny from Montana has lost friends due to her faith. Well, that's not all unusual. especially these days as our culture is turning its back more and more on the faith. Did you lose all your friends or just some of them?
All of them.
All of them? All
yeah.
of them?
Well, I'll give you a quick background. In January 1st, 2006, I had been a nurse, and then I had a terrible accident that almost killed me. And I got really depressed, and I started seeing a psychiatrist, a negligent one, who overdrugged me. And I became a great and terrible and fun sinner for about 13 to 15 years because of all the medications I was on. When someone finally told me how overdrugged I was and what I was doing, I got off all the medications and, of course,
Jenny?
My life...
Jenny, bring me up to what you told our call screamer, which was you've rejoined the church, and your friends aren't taking that well.
No, because I don't go to the bars anymore. I don't drink anymore. I became very devoted to my Catholic faith again.
Wait a minute. Are they hostile? Are they hostile, Jenny? Are they hostile to you? Because you don't live that lifestyle, or are your friendships just fading away because you don't engage in the activities that they still engage in?
They all just stopped. I mean, they just stopped.
So if you're not gonna party with us, we're not gonna have anything to do with you.
Exactly.
Have they come right out and said we really don't like you since you got religion?
Actually, my one friend I had since birth said, you don't like to do the things I do anymore, so there's no point in it.
Jenny, you got a couple of avenues to take here. The one is your own mind, which is you have to decide who's more important, your friends or Christ.
God is.
Okay, well then now you got the right mind there. The other avenue is, obviously, you can make new connections with people at church or different groups who think more like you. Can't you?
Yes, I have made a couple friends at church, which is nice. But it's hard making new friends. I'm almost 60 now, and I've had these friends all my life, and I kind of don't know how to make new friends.
Well, the easiest way is to be present. Social psychologists tell you that the number one factor in making new friends is proximity. That means nearness. We attend the same church. We have joined the same groups. We...
Okay.
Embark upon the same kinds of activities. I live close to the person. I work with the person. I volunteer with the person. In other words, just simply being around somebody tends to form some kinds of friendships. It does. So you don't really have to be active. Okay, how do I do this here? What formula do I apply to make myself a new friend? No, you don't have to do that. And the other thing too, Jenny, is if you show interest in other people, if you ask them about themselves, if you're truly, truly seeking the bits and pieces of who they are, their personalities, people are so attracted to that. Very few people do that, Jenny. If you are one who does that, oh, I'll tell you what, you won't have any shortage of people who want to be around you. She said her friends didn't want to have much to do with her anymore because they enjoyed doing things that she didn't want to do. Now, she said she was almost 60. I'm going to assume that her friends were in the same age cohort, all around her age. Are they still partying at the bars? What are they doing? But here's one of the things I see that folks who have a friend or a relative or someone they used to hang with to do the fun stuff, as society defines it, that no longer does this because they've decided, I want to explore my faith and I want to live my faith, they kind of take it personally. In other words, you're judging us. Now, Jenny may say, no, I don't. I don't say anything. I don't say to them, well, I'm just not into that anymore because I'm religious and because you people aren't. She probably doesn't say any of that. What they do is they think to themselves, yeah, you may not say anything, but we know how you think. And the fact that Jenny doesn't want to do those kinds of things that she took a lot of fun with before, which she doesn't think are necessarily all that good. Maybe it's excess drinking involved. Her friends, her former friends, are taking that as, well, we don't want to be around you because you're judgmental. Let's say that Jenny would go somewhere with a couple of those friends, and maybe they would drink, and she wouldn't. Would they be able to say, hey, that's Jenny, she doesn't want to drink anymore, cool, but she's still our friend? Or would they say, what's with her? She thinks she's superior to us? What's she saying, that we're bad? People have a tendency to do that, and that is why so many folks who want to live their faith are accused of being judgmental, even when they don't say a word. We know how you live. We know what you believe. We know what you think. Therefore, you're judging us. Back when we had our first son, he was about, I don't know, 3, 4. My wife came to me and she said, Ray, would you be willing to just not tell Andrew about Santa Claus so we can just focus on Christ and this being his birthday and not let Santa Claus, in fact, compete with Christ? I said, okay, yeah, that's cool. Well, oh boy, there were quite a few people when finding out that we weren't, quote-unquote, going to do Santa Claus. Oh, so you're saying that we were wrong in doing Santa Claus with our kid? I was interviewed by the local paper for some other topic, and somehow the Christmas thing came up, and I happened to mention, foolishly, that we weren't going to do Santa Claus. Oh, boy! They spent a good part of the article comments on people, this is before social media, which they really would have trashed us on social media, commenting on, that's such a shame. Santa Claus is such an enjoyable part of childhood. I can't believe that. They all took it personal. It's like, this was our decision. We make no comment on what you're doing. We don't judge what you're doing. We're not saying our way is the only way to do it. We're simply saying, for our family and our little boy, this is the direction we wanted to take. But people couldn't leave it at that. They immediately absorbed it personally. Their decision is a comment on our deficiency. And I think that's happened a little bit with Jenny. Her decision to embrace her faith is a comment on her friend's moral deficiency. I went to a bookstore the other day. I asked the sales lady, I said, can you tell me where the self-help section is? And she said, if I tell you, it would defeat the purpose. Yeah, I know. Nice to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Co-production of the Ave Maria Radio Communications Network, as well as EWTN. their broad 400-plus station network, as well as all kinds of apps and ways to listen all over the place, which is really cool. I remember, in a way, this kind of scares me a little bit, because when I was preparing for First Communion, Sister Liguori said that I don't know if this is church teaching or just something that Sister Liguori picked up from somewhere. She said, you know, the world is not going to end until there's the opportunity for the gospel to be preached everywhere. And I remember when I was 7 years old, I was thinking, well, that's going to be tough, you know, because back then we only had three channels, 3, 5, and 8, and there really wasn't a whole lot of way to get to faraway places. Well, now you have a computer, you have a smartphone, you can get religion easy. It's in the air. So now that makes me nervous. All right, let's go to, speaking of religion, some of these calls are from a few months back. And Ray from Kentucky had a comment about his observation of what happens pretty typically during the religious Christmas season.
When you go around our current world and look at the Christmas displays in people's yards, how many reindeers do you see versus how many crib sets do you see?
Oh, the reindeers, the snowmen, the candy canes, the Frosty, the snowmen's, they dwarf the baby Jesus in frequency.
Exactly.
Why do you think that is? What is happening out there? And draw a parallel also to Halloween, because I see as many Halloween decorations as I see Christmas decorations now. So what do you think is going on in our culture?
Well, I think it's an intentional de-Christianization, and part of, in fairness to a lot of Christians, they are being led down the path to, you know, of tolerance. We don't want to push our faith on other people. We don't want to be overtly Christian. We don't, you know, because you're going to offend somebody. Basically,
I think you're touching on it. We're becoming less Christian as a culture, and we're also afraid, in many respects, to be overtly Christian, because there are many people who think that's offensive to other people who don't believe that way, which just shocks me that we're not allowed to express our own beliefs. Richard John Neuhaus has talked often, he's now passed away, but a brilliant priest, and he said in a culture, how did he put this? I want to get this right. Anything that is optional will soon be proscribed. In other words, you won't be allowed to do it anymore. And I think you're right. There's a subtle pressure to not be overtly Christian in our culture. And all but the most, I would say brave, I guess, will quietly lower their heads. And there may be those people who, believe it or not, are afraid to put out something like that for fear of what could happen or somebody could damage it. I mean, that's the way we're moving in this culture. So you're right. I think we're becoming a culture that if you're going to be a Christian, you're going to become progressively more countercultural in the way the overall society looks at things. And that is sort of the way it is. You look at the surveys 50 years ago, something like 90% of the culture said they were Christian. And now what that means, of course, but they took the label Christians. Well, now it's, it's down to 70, maybe 60. And of those, they are saying they're Christian, kind of like, I'm Italian ancestry kind of thing. When the Christians were first breaking out into the pagan world, what they did was they Christianized many of the pagan celebrations, even the pagan places. They recognized that some of these things had already been locked into those pagan societies, those societies that had multiple gods, and therefore they piggybacked and infused Christianity into the things that were already part of the culture. A reverse process is now taking place. And that reverse process is that the religious celebrations are being paganized. The transformation of Christmas is, it's not complete, but it has gone a long way. Small example, I think what year it was, 1940s, the couple of skyscrapers in New York lit up their windows with crosses. Most recently, at Christmas, they lit up their windows with transgender colors. So the culture is taking something that the Christians, like Easter, many people still celebrate Easter, but they celebrate it in a way as kind of a holiday, a get-together with family members to do things, Easter egg hunts, stuff like that. So inch by inch, the culture is secularizing the Christian celebrations, Christian events, Christian gatherings. I thought that was a fascinating observation. I read that, I think, in the periodical First Things, talking about in the very earliest days of Christianity, the Christians Christianized the pagan celebrations. In these days of Christianity, the non-believers are secularizing the Christian celebrations. Good Friday is now just another Friday, completely. But there was a time, not all that long ago, where many businesses closed down or gave the day off because they knew a very high percentage of their employees believed in the magnificence of Good Friday. Well, Good Friday now is just the Friday before Easter. Now, it's still celebrated in church settings, among church congregations, but it is no longer part of the regular culture anymore. And I thought that was a fascinating reversal, and it touches into what Ray was talking about, which is Rudolph and Frosty and Jingle Bells and all of those things are now creeping in and pushing out images of the creche or images of Christ or those things that used to so closely mark the celebration, the true meaning of the holiday. Speaking 200 to 400 words a minute with Gus up to 800. I had the initiation of my newest group, a self-help group. You know, shrinks have to have self-help groups. Mine is for parents who talk too much, reason too much, nag too much, repeat themselves. I call it On and On Anon. This is Look Back Friday. Let's see what call we've got in the queue here. Let me see the time frame. How I want to do this. Let's go to Lori. Lori from Ohio. This is the new social media way to shun someone.
He basically said he despised me and, you know, said that he thought it was horrible that I got to go to college and he didn't.
Okay.
And, you know, things along that line and how he was, you know, a couple of choice words about my mom and dad who are both deceased. And I responded briefly and just said, you know, I didn't pick any of that for you. Oh, and he didn't get a lot of attention, he says, because of my medical condition. So, and you know, I can't argue with any of what he said because it's probably true. My parents were not fabulous at paying attention to any of us. But besides that, you know, this kind of just came out of nowhere. He had just texted me like a month before about a job opportunity for one of my kids. So, you know, and I went ahead and blocked him and blocked him on social media, but, and I kind of feel like, okay, I'm done. But by the same token, I hate that I would never have a relationship with him again, even though we weren't super close.
Why'd you block him, Lori?
Because at the time, I was so upset and overwhelmed. I thought, I don't want to, you know, he threw this big accusation at me out of the blue. And I just thought, I don't want to deal with this. This is ridiculous.
You think he was going to continue this through either texting or whatever social media contacts you have? You think he would do that, or he would call you again and rip on you again?
I have no idea.
The fact that
he did this at all shocked me.
It doesn't shock me at all, and I'll maybe give you a hint on why it's not shocking me at all. But and it's not because I think people are capable of anything. I think in your particular case, I'll tell you why it didn't shock me. However, to go further, would you say that your blocking him was like a reflex reaction? Okay, if you're going to treat me that way, get out of my life.
Yeah, I felt like I didn't want to submit myself to more anger from him.
So what's making you change your mind?
A lot of time has passed, and I just hate the fact that I wouldn't have any connection to him. I mean, we were not super close as adults, and I, you know, had fully admitted that I was a horrible little sister. There's no doubting that. But I just hate we were not super close as adults, but we got along okay as adults. We didn't see each other a lot, but we talked occasionally, and that seemed okay for both of us. And I didn't, you know, I'm just kind of feeling like, could this
even
be adult?
You said this came out of the blue, which is saying there is no way that I thought that he thought any of these things. And as a matter of fact, he doesn't mean any of it. He just, for whatever the reason, was having a bad day? Is that what you're thinking?
No. I think that he probably had thought some of these things. Like I said, I've admitted to him that I was a horrible sister and that he was a good brother in many ways. It's just frustrating because a lot of the things that he claims that that my existence made happen, I went through a lot of stress having him as an older brother. There were a lot of things he did that made me nervous and scared me, but I've let all that go.
Two levels to this, Lori. One, okay. Can I assume you're a Christian?
Of course.
Then you got to forgive him.
Yes, and I don't have a problem doing that.
Okay, well, yeah, but the problem with that is you can't say you forgave somebody if you totally blocked them out of your life. It's one thing to avoid them because they're dangerous or because they're completely obnoxious and they don't want any part of you. That's understandable. But if you're simply saying he mistreated me and all the things he said, they were just yucky, ugly things, and therefore get out of my life, then you can't say you forgive him. So that's the first thing. But the second thing's practical. If you say, this is my brother, all right, yeah, we never were close, but I don't want to go the nuclear option and just simply completely obliterate the relationship. I don't want to do that. Now, by implication, what do you do about it? Well, you might want to let him know that you blocked him because you reacted.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to take it a step further, you can say, I'm sorry I blocked you. I've had plenty of time to rethink it, and I think I was wrong in blocking you. Now, you're not saying, okay, well, I you didn't do anything wrong, I was wrong. No, you're not saying that. You're just not addressing that. You're not saying, I blocked you because I was hurt. I blocked you because of all the things you said. No, you're not doing any of that.
Okay.
You're just saying, I'm sorry I blocked you. That was an impulsive move, and I've had plenty of time to settle down, and I'm sorry. And so if you want to get a hold of me, I'm here. That's what I would do. Now, it doesn't mean you have to be close to the guy. Doesn't mean he has to like you all that much. It just means you're going to put the bridge back up. That's all. I know why I selected this one for Look Back Friday. I didn't get into it as much as I wanted to. She used a key phrase, although she backed off on it a little bit. She qualified it. She said, out of the blue. And then she said, well, no, there were times I wasn't the greatest little sister, whatever it was in their history. I hear this a lot. People will say, my sister won't talk to me, or my mother hasn't contacted me in a year and a half, and we were so close. We were always tight as a family or as friends. Or we just had the nicest relationship, and all of a sudden, they just flat out unloaded on me. Far more often than not, that was building. That was brewing. The relationship was not as close as you thought. It had the superficiality of closeness, or maybe in some respects it seemed warm, but that's because the other person was stewing and brewing, and you didn't know it. Then something happened that you thought was nowhere near big enough to sever this relationship. But now I'm hearing all kinds of stuff that I had no idea that they took the way they took. Sadly, that happens a lot. You don't realize, and okay, forgive me, I'm going to interrupt myself again. This commonly happens in generations where grandma says, my daughter-in-law unloaded on me and now I can't see the grandkids. Or a parent says, my son came over here and I said something and he just erupted with all kinds of things that I supposedly have done to him. I haven't heard from him since. I can't believe this. My son and I were always so close. Sadly, what can happen is that someone can take what you say or do, either misinterpret it, not like it, take offense by it, and build up. And then it has to hit flashpoint. It hits nuclear level, and the eruption occurs. And you're tempted to think to yourself, where's that coming from? The point to be made here is that don't be shocked necessarily that this represents a complete about-face in your relationship. It goes from wonderfully warm and attached to detached and cold. If you look back on it, you probably recognize that there were signs, little bits and pieces of this happening, and then it just finally hit the point where it was explosive. So, that's the point I think I wanted to make with this, as she pointed out that her brother just decided to let her have it. And she said, I don't want to hear that anymore, so I'm not taking any chances he's going to do it again, and I'll just shut him down social media-wise. Then, if I recall the details correctly, she said, it's been 5 years. Now, one more point. I should have said this to her, but I didn't have time. He may not at all take her reconciliation. He may say, what, 5 years you write me off? Now you want to reconcile? I don't think so. But at least she can say to herself, I tried. How he responds is out of her control. The only thing in her control is to do what she thinks is the good thing to do. I'm Dr. Ray.
What's the deal with Dr. Ray? I mean, is he a psychologist or a comedian?
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Fire on the Earth's Peter Herbeck. Jesus said, you're the light of the world, and one of the things that he meant by that was the Christian people understand the larger story that's unfolding in history. So as St. Paul said, as the saints echoed very clearly, we're now living through just a short moment, a slight momentary affliction, he calls it. in this life, which is going to make way and lead us to an eternal glory beyond all compare. The secret to the fruitfulness and the strength of the apostles was that they lived with a clear vision of the future, an eternal perspective, fixed on the destiny of where their life was headed. And they lived with the realization that, wow, yeah, life is very short here. Everything is temporary. Nothing here in this world is ultimately going to last except the ultimate destinies, the eternal destinies of every human being that exists on the earth. And they knew that whether good things were coming their way or bad things from the world's perspective were coming away, nothing could steal from them, nothing could take away the gold that was in their heart, the treasure that they bore. You're a temple of the Holy Spirit.
Peter Herbeck spreads fire on the earth weekday mornings at 6:30 and again at 11:45 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
God bless you, Dr. Ray. You've changed a lot of lives for the better, my friend, and keep at it.
Thank you so much for joining me on The Doctor Is In. It is a great privilege, truly is, to be able to do this program. Truly. I just finished my Diet Coke, which, I don't really want to complain, but sometimes I have to put it, like, toward the computer monitor, so I have to stretch to get it. Yeah, life's tough, but for me, it's all about commitment. I don't have time to do any more look-back calls. The one I wanted to go to up there was a four-minute call, and as I look at the clock here, I'm looking at about 3 minutes. I want to read something by C.S. Lewis, as I frequently do. This is from Mere Christianity. A silly idea is current that good people do not know what temptation means. This is an obvious lie. Only those who try to resist temptation know how strong it is. A man who gives in to temptation after 5 minutes simply does not know what it would have been like an hour later. That is why bad people, in one sense, know very little about badness. They have lived a sheltered life by always giving in. You don't know how strong temptation can threaten to overwhelm you if you don't let it overwhelm you. If at any point along the line you give in, then you never really felt the full effect, the full strength of that temptation. An analogy was drawn, I think, some other place in Lewis's writing where he said, you don't realize how strong an army is if you surrender to it. If you resist it all the way to the end, you'll find out absolutely how strong it is. Good people resist temptation all the way to its maximum strength and don't give in to it. Of course, Scripture's clear. The Lord doesn't let us be tempted beyond our ability. That would be kind of unfair, wouldn't it? If in fact temptation was so strong that there was absolutely nothing you could do about it, That would be kind of putting you in a tricky situation. So Lewis makes the point. Temptation that is strong can get stronger when you resist it. Say, if you're a guy and you've had trouble with pornography, and your wife has left the house, and you know what the password is on that computer that she put on there. You've discovered it somehow. And you know she's going to be gone for an hour. And you're just not going to go, you're not going to go near that computer. And as the time passes and you try to distract yourself, you immerse, you pray, you find that that temptation is just getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And it probably reaches its peak, at least, when she finally walks in the door, because you resisted it the whole time she was gone. if at any point during that hour she was gone, you went to that computer, you gave in. And you gave in at a point where the temptation was not at its full power. You didn't realize how strong it could be. You said to yourself, no, it got overwhelming. I gave in. No, it didn't get overwhelming because the real overwhelming was yet to come, or the real strength was yet to come. Thanks for joining me here on The Doctor Is In on this Look Back Friday. So very much appreciate your company, good Lord permitting. I'll talk to you on Monday. Thank you, Andrew Krucek, for all you do over there in Ann Arbor. Walk with God. That is the strength you need to overcome the strongest of temptations.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit drray.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.